Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Here's your money briefing for Sunday, January 14th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. The second of our four-part series of Sunday episodes about making the right moves to plan your financial future focuses on paying off your debt. For some people, it's an uphill battle because of how they approach their monthly expenses.
A lot of people only look at that minimum payment and when it's due. They're not calculating what the interest is on the full balance and how that is affecting them. So they're thinking, well, I pay off my credit card, I pay the minimum, and that's actually not the same as paying off your credit card.
We'll talk to WSJ's Beray Lamb and Julia Carpenter, authors of The New Rules of Money, after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Paying down debt can be a path to financial freedom, but for many, that's no easy task. Beray Lamb and Julia Carpenter, authors of The New Rules of Money, are back. Hey guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
So last week we talked about the importance of knowing your numbers. When people do that and they see all their bills and all their accounts, they might think, oh, boy, do I wish I was debt-free. Is that realistic, Julia?
It's a great idea in practice, but it's just not realistic for so many people. I'm thinking about all of the people I interview who by necessity have to carry a certain amount of debt. They don't have the income to just wipe out their student loans or not pay a mortgage.
And paying off debt, it can seem intimidating to a lot of people with big ticket items, like you said, mortgages and car loans, plus all the other monthly bills that people have. What is the best way for them to approach this maze of debt that they have?
You could be smart about your debt. And the way to do that is you have to look at the interest rate you're paying on each debt. When you pay off your debt, you want to do something called debt prioritization. And debt prioritization means listing out all your debts and when they're due, what's the minimum payment, what's the full payment, what's the interest and fees you'll pay if you don't make that minimum or full monthly payment.
A lot of people only look at that minimum payment and when it's due. They're not calculating what the interest is on the full balance and how that is affecting them. So they're thinking, well, I pay off my credit card, I pay the minimum. That's actually not the same as paying off your credit card.
People may feel like debt is a burden on them, but not all debt is necessarily a negative burden, right?
Absolutely. It is my aspiration to have housing debt. I would love to have a mortgage. There's a lot of debt that we take on because it is a way for us to reach another step. That's where so many people feel conflicted about their student loans. They took on these student loans in order to receive an education that would then allow them to live the kind of life they want to live. And they were told it was good debt. And now they're looking at their balance. And they're saying, hold on, am I actually paying more now than I took out?
There's two schools of thought on this. And it's somewhat changed recently, I would say, in maybe the past decade or so. A generation ago, I would say, there's a school of thought that's like, there's good debt and there's bad debt. And good debt is fine to have. Have as much of it as you want. If you're funding your education, if you're funding your house, like things that will appreciate, that's good debt. And then the bad debt is the stuff that doesn't appreciate and just costs you. So like credit card is the classic example. In recent years, as the cost of college has really gone up and as the cost of housing has really gone up. Despite low interest rates, people are really starting to realize that too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. You know, I was riding at the subway the other day and there was this ad and it wasn't selling anything. It was just trying to educate people, like a nonprofit trying to educate people on student debt. And it was like, yeah, too much student debt could be a bad thing. And traditionally, student debt is a low interest debt. You can apply for forgiveness. There are plans. There are many options for how you pay it back. So it's been always seen as a good debt, but too much of a good thing really can be a bad thing. It can be mentally stressful. It can be really stressful on your monthly budget. And then for housing debt, a lot of people took out really big mortgages when interest rates were low to be competitive in the market for houses. We know that the U.S. is at a historic low of entry-level housing. So for people who are just first-time home buyers entering the market, they've had to put up these very high bids in order to get anything. And you really have to be careful of like how much of your monthly budget is going to this debt, because if you have a change in your financial situation, you could go under really quickly if you're too leveraged.
And Julia, you said a moment ago you would love to have housing debt. You'd love to have a house and pay a mortgage because you would have a house. But also the exercise of paying off your mortgage on a monthly basis and paying it off on time can really pay off dividends down the line for more debt commitments you want to make, something like buying a car.
Absolutely. The other thing about something like mortgage debt is that because it's a fixed interest rate, you are guaranteeing consistency. Something I talk a lot about with my friends is that paying rent right now, I am not guaranteed that in the next 2 years, my landlord won't jump up my rent. But I am guaranteed if I have a mortgage that I will be paying at the same interest rate for 15 years or 30 years.
Besides that, people oftentimes have a lot of plastic in their wallet, lots of credit cards, and they might go shopping with it. But how should people think about this if they're wondering, can I afford this based on my broader debt picture and my personal finances?
Can I afford this is a tricky question because a lot of people think about it in terms of what they have access to. Can I afford this? Well, I have 3 credit cards and I have a debit card and I have $20 in my wallet. I can totally afford this. But instead, think about, can I afford this in my greater picture? How much debt are you taking on to afford this? What does this add to my payment that I'm going to be making on the credit card at the end of the month?
Let's get back to the larger packages of debt that people might have, like a mortgage. How should those payments fit into someone's overall budget? How should they plan how much they'll wind up paying per month based on their overall personal finances?
You should look at your budget the way the banks look at your budget. They scrutinize every account. If you've ever been through a mortgage application process, they want to know where each dollar in your account comes from, and are you going to pay them back? And one of the measures that mortgage brokers and underwriters look at when they determine whether you qualify for a mortgage is your debt-to-income ratio. Your debt-to-income ratio is a percentage, and you can use a calculator online to determine what it is. But usually, for different lenders and loans, they have different requirements. But the general rule is that your debt-to-income ratio has to be under 36%. If lenders are saying that your debt-to-income ratio for housing costs should be under 36%, that means that your monthly mortgage payment with all your fees and your insurance should be under 36% of your monthly take-home pay after tax.
Oh, that I word keeps coming up. Interest. What do people need to know about interest if they want to set out to try to get a loan?
There's 2 points I want to make right away. One is that interest is the money that you pay to borrow money. So think about that number as the number that you will be paying throughout the life of the loan. The second point I want to make is that there's a spectrum here. There's low interest loans, high interest loans, and very, very high interest loans, and different loan products fall into each of these categories. So take low interest loans. That's something that's going to be under 10%. That's something like federal student loans. Right now, mortgage rates are around 7%. High interest loans, that's something between 10 to 30%. And that's the most common types of loans because that's typically credit cards. And then very, very high interest loans are something that hopefully no one has to take out. A lot of states don't allow payday loans, for example, because they are in this category.
And if you have this category of loans, pay it off right away.
Mm-hmm.
Get
mm-hmm.
rid of it.
If people want to buy a car, what kind of an interest rate should they expect on that?
Right now, car interest rates are hovering around 6%, That's a little bit lower than the average last year, but you won't be seeing like the 0% interest rates from a couple years ago. We're just in a different rate environment right now.
That was during the pandemic. It was 0%.
Yeah, that's right. But when you're making a big purchase, and they say this for home purchase.
There were no cars on the lot also.
Exactly. What are you going to do with a 0% interest rate if there's no cars for you to buy? Same with housing. Like, I get that. At one point, people were getting like 2.8% mortgages. But then how much did you have to bid for a house to actually get one? Those are all things that you have to consider when you're making a big purchase, like a home. And for many Americans, a car is their first big purchase. So when you're making that big purchase, look at the interest rate, but also look at what you're buying. If you have a low interest rate, that doesn't mean you should splurge out for a car that you can't afford. You still want to look at what you can do in monthly payments and how many months those payments are going to last.
It's a trade-off. We saw that feverish home buying season when interest rates were so low on mortgages that people were spending more to get the house to lock in that interest rate because it was so tantalizingly low. But then I was talking with homeowners who said, we know we overpaid for this house. We know we overpaid for it. But in their mind, the trade-off they were making was, but now I have a 3% interest rate. And other people say, I want to wait till housing prices fall, even if I have a higher interest rate, so that I can get a house and then refinance down the line.
I think it's like about how much you can stomach.
Right.
Both ways are fine.
Right.
Like, as long as you're realistic that you can make those monthly payments, sure, you overpaid for the house, but what was the return is that you got the house. Mm. You got to buy a house at 2.9% or 3%, which are, you know, mortgage rates that we may not see for decades. And yeah. So mortgage rates are trending down, but I don't know that anybody thinks that they're going to go below 3% anytime soon. That was a thing that happened that I hadn't seen in my adult life.
And you might be able to stomach those rates, like you said, if
exactly.
you had sketched out all your numbers, like we talked about last week, know your
totally,
numbers.
Totally, yeah. If you know your numbers and you're like, I'm not going to refi, this is like the locked monthly payment that I'm doing for my 30-year fix, then you're good to go. Whereas if you are someone who are like, I can't stomach paying that price tag, I will pay a little bit of a higher interest rate because we know when interest rates are higher, there's more inventory, but it's not fixed. Like, even though if I'm doing a 30-year fixed, I'm planning to refi when rates are a little bit different and I'm going to be able to lower my monthly.
It goes back to what you were saying about knowing yourself. It's
yeah.
so individual. And there's no way that is categorically better. We're all also just guessing on timing.
We are. You know, I actually, so this morning I was talking about 401ks, and there was this BlackRock study about how if you just rebalanced your 401k last year in these ways, your returns would have been so much better. But we can't backdate our financial decisions based on the past.
Nobody has a crystal ball.
Nobody has a crystal ball. You can't like backdate things and be like, things would have been so much better if I knew this was going to happen. Work with the information you have. Know your numbers. Know what kind of debt you can take on. And just like work with the situation based on what you have and what you can afford and what you can stomach. And we can only make the best decision in the moment. We can't look back and be like, I could have made a better decision.
That's WSJ's Beray Lamb and Julia Carpenter. And that's it for your Money Briefing. We're off tomorrow, but we'll be back on Tuesday with a new episode of YMB. And Beray and Julia will be back next Sunday to discuss how to know if buying a home is the right financial move for you. This episode was produced by Ariana Osperu, with supervising producer Melanie Roy. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.